Mark chapter 6, verses 30 through 32. The apostles, Jesus' followers, his disciples, gathered around Jesus and reported to him all that they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. If you're thinking about buying that boat, here's your sign. This past week, I got up Monday and I thought, this is going to be a full week. We've got a lot going on. We've got back to school night, and so we hopped into Monday, and we went to back to school night, and before back to school night, I was trying to juggle because somebody was moving out of town, so we were doing a little party for them to say goodbye, and my wife is a teacher, so she's been spending the last couple of weeks at school getting things ready, and then I jumped into Tuesday and dropped the kids off at the farm because I had a bunch of meetings to do and then a couple things to get ready. I had to get a sermon outline in by Tuesday because Wednesday I was leaving for Kalispell, and so I left on Wednesday for Kalispell because I was doing a wedding up there on Thursday. Got up to Kalispell, and we got a little confusion around where I was going to stay, and so I ended up, instead of staying in a hotel, I stayed in the back of my truck, just living the good life, okay? And I found a little campsite, and I think I heard an elk bugle. I could have been dreaming, but it's that time of year. I'm pretty sure I heard an elk bugle. And then woke up the next morning and realized, like, I don't have a place to shower before I do this wedding. So I took a bath in Flathead Lake. I'm going to be honest with you. I was like, living the best life, okay? It's a good thing I have a wife. Let's just say it that way, all right? Like, she keeps me, like, grounded and not living in campsites and out in the, you know, the bathing in public spaces, okay? And then I did the wedding that afternoon, beautiful wedding on Flathead Lake, incredible evening. At about 9:30, I thought I better get going because I had to get back to Bozeman. Got back to Bozeman about 2 in the morning, and at 6 in the morning, got back up, went over to the Yellowstone River, hopped on a boat with some friends, and we floated the Yellowstone River, saw eagles, caught some fish, had an incredible day. I was a little tired at that point, right? Got home, went to bed, and thought, I should write my sermon at some point. And so I got up yesterday morning at 5 in the morning because I was writing a sermon, but it was also Elk Archery opener. So, you know, things. And so hiked up about 2,000 feet looking for some elk, didn't run into elk, ran into a bear. That was kind of fun, and had a wonderful day. Got back down, took a little nap yesterday afternoon, and here we are. So I want to start, hold on, don't clap for that yet. I want to start by having a confession, and the confession is this. Maybe you saw my name tag as you walked in here and thought, what's a name tag all about? Some of you in the back are like, I think I can see the name tag. Here's the confession in the name tag. Hello, my name is, I am so busy. So busy. I got to the end of this week and I thought, I've had a busy week. I'm so busy. And it's not just me, because I've talked to some other people and they're so busy as well. I talked to one of my family members, and they're in, you know, the fall, the kickoff for all the things, and they're running around, and they've got stuff going on at home, stuff going on at work, and I walked into their house, and I was dropping off the kiddos, and I said, hey, how you doing? And she said, oh, I'm so busy, so busy. Talked to another buddy, and I said, hey, how you doing? First things that came out of his mouth over the phone was, man, at work, I'm so, so busy. He actually said, I'm so busy, I don't even have time to pee. I said, what? He said, I'm serious, Brian. I go from Zoom to Zoom to Zoom, and I'm like, I probably should get out of this Zoom call, but I can go 5 more minutes, and then he eventually has to run out of the room without any explanation, right? He's so busy. He's so busy. He's so busy. Let me ask you a question. How busy are you? Could you wear this name tag as well? How busy are you right now? So I want a little audience participation. So here's what we're going to do. Scale from 1 to 10, okay? Scale from 1 to 10, and you're just going to say it out loud, okay? I know this feels very charismatic for some of you. It's okay. It'll be okay, I promise, okay? So scale of 1 to 10. 1, I don't have anything to do. I have nothing to do, okay? 10 or 11 or 12, I got a lot to do, okay? So yell that number out, 1 to 10, ready? 1, 2, 3. Okay. All right. Let's break it down a little bit. How many of you are 10s? Raise your hand. Raise your hand nice and high. It's okay. I ain't going to pick on you too much. I'm going to pick on everybody. I promise by the end of the day. Okay. How many of you are 5 and above? Raise your hand really, really high. Okay. Look at that. Look around. Okay. Online. Put your number in 1 through 10, right? Most of you are above 5. Okay. So you're above, like, I'm not bored, but I'm pretty busy. We live in a busy world, and that's not a bad thing. We'll get into it, but it is something that we should pay attention to. In particular, like with men, don't we talk about work as being busy a lot? Man, how are you doing at work? Oh, I'm so busy. So busy at work. Talk to gals, and they're like, man, I'm so busy. I've got, you know, we got kids going to back to school. We got lunches that need to be made. We got to get them out of the house, and I got that job. And like, it's kind of a badge of honor, right? I think men wear it more at work. Women wear it more at home in general. But I think we have this age of busyness. Now, I'm not going to come down on the busyness, because I actually think we should stay busy with the right things. It's a bit of a different sermon. I'm not going to preach that one today. But what I want to talk about is, what do we do in the midst of that busyness so that we can stay in a healthy place? What is the rhythm? What is the pattern so that we don't get burned out, so that we don't function on empty? One of the things that I do, one of the exercises that I do with a lot of guys when I'm working through life planning and executive coaching, is I ask them, how full or how empty is your tank? And here's the reality. You function the best when you're on full. You don't function the best when you're on empty. When you're on empty, you're anxious and irritable. You're frustrated with others. You're tired all the time. But when you're functioning on full, right, you have a lot to give. You have a lot to give to others. You feel some refreshment even in that giving when you're on full. And so, how do we operate in this busy season? Because we're in a busy season. It's fall, right? MSU students, welcome back. We're so glad you're here, right? School started this past week. Football games this past weekend, right? We've got, for farmers, we've got farmers in full swing right now. We've got harvest going around all around the valley. It's fall kickoff here at church next week. You already heard about that. So it's like, oh, we got lots and lots and lots and lots of things to do. What do we do? What do we do in the midst of all of those good, busy things? And on top of it all, it's archery season. So I'll pray for you who will be single parenting this month, right? I think we need to find what the answer is to this, what the antidote is to this, what the other side of the coin is for this. And I think that we can do that by listening very closely to the words of Jesus in a busy season of ministry for him and his disciples. See, Jesus knows exactly how it feels to be busy. He's very busy in the midst of what we just read. He has just sent out his 12 disciples two at a time to cast out demons and to heal people and anoint them with oil, and they're coming back to report to him. His second cousin, John the Baptist, has just been killed, and he's about to, if you flip the page, he's about to feed a lot of people with a little boy's lunch. So he's got a lot going on. He is busy. And once again, I'm not advocating for laziness, so don't send me that email this week, okay? I am advocating for, what do you do in the midst of this? They're doing these great things, and they've got great things in front of them, but there's this moment when it's just like culminating, and it says this: so many people were coming and going that they did not have a chance to eat. Have you had that recently? I don't eat breakfast. Why not? Well, I don't have time. I don't eat lunch. I gotta work. We gotta work through lunch. We gotta do a work lunch, which means we're not really taking lunch, right? Oh, we don't have time for dinner with the family. We don't. We have this kid's in this thing and this kid's in that thing, and I gotta go do this thing, and we're all here. We're here and here and here. We don't have time. We don't have time for that. We don't have any time to even eat together. The disciples are saying, yeah, they don't have time to eat. They don't have time. They don't have time. And so in the midst of this, what does Jesus do? In the midst of this, he gives a solution. He says there's an antidote that will keep us on full, not on empty, so that our soul is coming out of a place of health and fullness, and we have something to offer other than emptiness, frustration, and fatigue, okay? And so what is that antidote? Well, the antidote is this. It's the pause. He doesn't use that word, but I'm going to use that word today. It's the strategic pause. And that's what I think a lot of us need right now. I think a lot of us need the strategic pause. The antidote, according to Jesus, is the pause. Fun thing about pause buttons. You know anything about pause buttons? All right? So pause buttons are they're two little lines, and they usually go next to the triangle that says play, right? They're actually a pretty new invention. They came around in the 1960s. And so there's this generational test, we'll call it, okay? So if you want to know how old somebody is, if you say to them, hey, have you listened to a book on tape lately? And they engage you in conversation, they're older than you think they are, okay? Right? Because this is educational for some, especially MSU students and younger, okay? There was this thing called the tape player. We used to have it, right? Some of you remember this. And there was actually tape inside of this little cassette, and it would go round and round, and that's how you would play your music, or you'd make a mixtape on there to, you know, woo the girl, and like that was like a big, big deal. And in the midst of all of that, there was the play button, and then there was the pause button, which could pause the player from playing. You could actually rewind it with a pencil. That's even cooler, okay? The definition of the pause button is this: an indicator which stops operation intermittently and keeps the equipment in operational mode. So it stops whatever it's doing, but keeps it in operational mode. I'm not saying you shouldn't be in operational mode. I think you should be in operational mode. I think you should be preparing for operational mode. But I think there are moments when you need to have an intermittent pause. You need to stop the operations that are going on around you, and you need to take a pause, just like Jesus and his disciples did. It's in the midst of the busyness of ministry that Jesus tells his disciples, pause. Take a pause. Here's specifically what he says. He says, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. So these are the words for the disciples, but I want you to listen to them as if they'd be words for you. What if Jesus said to you in this busy season, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. That sounds pretty good for some of us, doesn't it? Like that sounds necessary for some of us. And I can already hear us in our heads, like some of us making excuses like, I don't have the time to do that, Jesus. Well, Jesus and his disciples, in the midst of the busyness of ministry, this is what his call was to them. And I don't think the call has changed. I think Jesus wants to come with him by ourselves to a quiet place and get rest. He says, pause. Let's go. Let's find a quiet spot and let's get some rest. So our time together, I want to unpack four aspects of the pause. Four aspects of the pause. And so the first one is this. Go away. Go away. So when do you know that you need to go away? When you think other people should go away, That's a good indicator that maybe you need to go away for a while. I actually said that, you know, in the first service, and I walked up to somebody and they're like, Brian, I got to tell you, somebody came to the house and I just wanted to tell them, go away, please go away. Well, that's an indicator, like you're not functioning out of health there. You're functioning out of frantic, frazzled world. And so what do? Well, you go away. Jesus tells them, come with me. Come with me. That means they're going to go away somewhere. They're not going to stay where they were. They're going to go away somewhere. So the first part of go away is go. Jesus doesn't say, hey guys, let's pray about going away. Let's plan to go away and then never implement that. Let's think nice thoughts about going away someday. Like, you know, I mean, here's the reality. In a sermon like this, because I'll just reveal it at the end, I'm going to challenge you to go do this, okay? Because Jesus did. So, you know, good enough for Jesus, good enough for you, good enough for me, right? So, going isn't staying, and going is some form of action. It's some form of action. It's not just good intention. It's that we would take action. And this is one of the things I love about Jesus. He's a man of action. Even in the stopping, because he's asking them to stop, he's telling them to go. Isn't that crazy? Like, in the stopping, he's telling them, let's go do this. This is how important it is. He doesn't see it as like this thing that I'm away, like I'm not engaged anymore. No. He sees it as an opportunity to go somewhere. And the Bible is littered with stories of people who are willing to go, not stay. Go, not stay. One of the forefathers of this movement is Abraham, and he was called to go away from his land. Go to a foreign land. Go that he might be the blessing who blesses other nations. But if he had stayed, nothing would have happened. He had to go. God tells Jonah to go to Nineveh. And Jonah says, I will go a different way. And instead he gets swallowed by a fish and spit onto the land, right? Because God's like, no, you're going to go. That's what you're going to do. You're going to go, all right? So one part of it is that we would go. The youth these days, they have this phrase. They're like, let's go. You hear young people saying this? I don't know. It's after they like score a touchdown and I'm like, where are we going? I don't know. You just made a basketball hoop. Good job. Let's go. But that's what Jesus is beckoning. Let's go. Let's go away. The second part is away. The second part is away. That's where we're going. We're going away. So I messed around with Bob first service a little bit because there's something about being a pastor and being a public figure. And if you're a public figure, you kind of know this. Plus, we live in Bozeman, which is growing, but it's a small town. It really is still a small town. Like, you can go to certain places and see people that you know on a very, very regular basis. And I think there's something really great about that. But there are moments as well where we should go away. Because for a guy like Bob, here's the deal. And Carmen was sitting here at the first service. It was hilarious because she was just nodding like, yep, that's how it works. And like, Bob can't go out for dinner and without running into somebody that knows him. And what happens is they like look over at you. I've been here. And they look over at you and look over at you. And then your wife nudges you and is like, you should probably go talk to them. Like, you're their pastor. So, right. And so like, it's like, okay, I will. And I'm not saying you shouldn't stop saying hi to Bob. In fact, I think you should double down on it. I'm just letting you know. It's just word from the Lord. All right. But honestly, for Bob, he went away on sabbatical. And he withdrew on sabbatical. He just got back on it. But there were times where he went literally away. One of the habits I had when I was doing full-time ministry and working at the church is that I would often go to a conference in a place that was far away from here. And honestly, it was just this beautiful thing to go away to a place and be fed by some other teachers and to get engaged in some other conversations and to just meet some new people. And there was some sort of body battery replenish that was happening in the going away. go away. Jesus invites them into this, and the question would be, would you need to go away as well? Number two, find a quiet place. So he says, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place. Find a quiet place. Last year, we did a sermon series called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, based upon a book by a pastor, John Mark Comer. And in the beginning of that book, he talks about both the external noise and the internal noise in our life. External noise is like the noise on Huffine this week when you were trying to drive down it and you were like praying and probably cussing a little because of what was going on Huffine on opening day of school. Why did they not think of this better, right? And there were machines and we've got construction and there's noise there, and maybe you've got kiddos and they're noisy, and then you've got, maybe you're in a business situation where you got people that are working for you and they're calling you. And by the way, we live in the most noisy of all generations in probably history because of that little thing in your pocket called the phone. It's always buzzing and beeping and giving you notifications and distracting you from life. External noise is just coming in like crazy. Like, do you realize that even 100 years ago, nobody had one of those? Do you realize not far beyond that, nobody had these things called lights? And so at night, they would go to sleep because there was no light. This is not our reality. Our reality is that we can have external forces just invading our lives all the time. Noisy, noisy, noisy. And it's not more encouraging than that. It's worse than that, because not only do we have external noise, but we have internal noise, don't we? Like, we're questioning ourselves, and we're thinking about that conversation that we just had that didn't go very well, and we're thinking about whether or not we should stay in this job or not, and we're thinking about how the marriage is going, how our kids are doing, whether this is going to be a good school year or not. We have this internal noise going on. And so we've got this external noise, internal noise. And it's just a pure reality that our lives are noisy. Our lives are so noisy. And so what if we would go away to a quiet place? This is what Jesus is advocating. He's saying, remove the distractions and find yourself a quiet place. It's been a book that has been very helpful for me called Whisper by Mark Batterson. He's a pastor over in Washington, D.C. And he talks about whispering spots. You've heard me talk about this before if you've been around here. But there are these special quiet places that I go, and I go intentionally so I might hear the voice of God. I go with expectancy. I go with probably a journal and a Bible, and that's about it. I turn off my phone. I completely unplug the best that I can so that I can engage with the whispers of God, because I can only engage with the whispers of God when I am quiet. There's this incredible story about a prophet in the Old Testament named Elijah. And Elijah goes on this mountain, and he's seeking out God because he thinks he's the only person left who's pursuing God, who's faithful to God. And a great earthquake comes, and a great storm comes, a great fire comes. And in all of these noises, God doesn't show up, which you'd expect him to. Like, he's there. These are these grand moments, right? But it's after all of these forces of nature that God comes in a still, small voice. Some interpreters would say he comes in the sound of a whisper. Maybe we're not hearing the voice of God. Maybe we're not hearing his whispers because we have not quieted ourselves to his voice. Find yourself a quiet place. Even if it's just in a corner in a chair. There's a great revivalist, John Wesley, and his mom used to take her apron, and she used to take it and put it over her head, okay? And she used to tell her kids, like, when mommy's under the apron, she's praying. Might be sleeping. She didn't say that, but I'm just guessing. But she's under there in a quiet place. You can do this. Even if it's 15 minutes in that chair, in that corner, you can do this. This is why some of you have that place on the lake, or you love to camp, or you love to redneck it like me and bathe in Kalispell in the Flathead Lake, right? Like, go to a quiet place. Come away. Go to a quiet place. Third, get some rest. Get some rest. Now, I don't know that the Greek exactly says this, but there's this tie to rest and sleep, okay? And so that's a very interesting connection. And there's this other story about Jesus in a boat, where he's in a boat and they're going from place to place, because that was often how they traveled around that area on the Sea of Galilee quite often. And there's another story about Jesus in the boat with his disciples, and a storm comes up. And it's rocking the boat, and they're all thinking they're going to die, the disciples. And they're like, where's Jesus? And he's taking a nap in the front of the boat. I've seen a t-shirt that says, Jesus takes naps. I think it's great. I think somebody should buy it, right? Jesus takes naps, so should you. There's something about rest. And we live in a culture that does not find value in that. And we need to rethink that. I was reading a book called Why We Sleep, which this past year was one of the more frightening reads, I would say, and interesting reads. And it talked about actually the science behind why we need to sleep. Some of the data in it was familiar to me, but some of it was new. Like, some of the data said most adults need between 7 and 9 hours of sleep per night. Do a self-audit. How much sleep are you getting? Are you getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep per night? Because that's what you need. And some of you are like, I don't need that. Well, let me give you some more data for that, okay? So without sleep for 24 hours, you are as impaired as someone who could be charged with a DUI. You are sleep drunk. So college students, pro tip. If you think you can pull an all-nighter and pass the test tomorrow or, you know, later this semester, just remember this, okay? Probably not. Probably not, because you're sleep drunk. It's like a thing. It's a thing. Your brain isn't working the same way you thought it would, and you think you're smart, but that's how drunk people are too. They're like, I'm really funny, and you're like, not really. You're kind of annoying, okay? But it gets way more interesting than that as they dove deeper into this study. They did a one-week study where they limited participants to between 4 and 6 hours of sleep. So they basically sleep-deprived them for an entire week. And then they did a study, a brain scan, and they saw what was going on in the brain, and then they did a body scan to see what was going on even in their genetic makeup, okay? And one of the most interesting things in there is that there was over 700 aspects of their genes that were mutating because of the lack of sleep for 1 week. 700 genes that were mutating. Did you think about that? Like, I know some of you are like on your soapbox about like non-GMO free-range chickens or whatever. I like non-GMO free-range elk. That's what I like. So, yeah, okay. But think about that. Like, we get on our soapbox about that, but this is mutating 700 of your genes, and not for the better. Right? Accompanying lack of sleep, there's a massive connection to Alzheimer's, massive connection to heart disease, massive connection to obesity, massive connection to shorter lifespans. In fact, in the book, and you know, they're swayed because of what they're producing in terms of their content. But they were saying that, you know, sleep, it trumps exercise, trumps what you eat. And I would say minimally, it should be at least part of the conversation, which I'm not sure that it is in our day and age. One last stat for you. So we're about to have fall back. So we gain an hour of sleep, right? So we're going to gain an hour of sleep coming up here in the next couple of weeks. And so what's really interesting during fall back is that we gain an hour. And statistically, there are 21% less heart attacks the day after we get an extra hour of sleep. Versus in spring forward, when we lose an hour of sleep, there's 24% more heart attacks the next day. Should we get rid of daylight savings? I'm just saying. I'm just putting it out there. It's about anyway, okay. Jesus says, get some rest. This is really interesting. Get some rest. When was the last time you really, really rested? Like the Sabbath day. I've preached this sermon before. I don't have time to go into all of it, but the Sabbath, Sunday, for us, is a day that's supposed to be set aside for rest. Like today is supposed to be all of these things, by the way, for you. This should be a gift. Every Sunday should be a gift. And honestly, some of that should be very, very restful. So go away, find a quiet place, get some rest. That's what I want you to do. That's the challenge. So we'll call it the pause challenge. Are you going to do it? Are you going to get away? Are you going to find a quiet place? And are you going to get some rest? That's the challenge. And here's the cool thing about this. Even if you're not a Christian, and I know at a place like Journey, we have folks who are just kicking around the tires on Jesus, which is awesome. And he's, because you're here, he's after you, which sounds a little creepy, but he's going to get you, which is even better. He's coming. But here's the cool part. Like, you could do all of those even if you didn't believe in God at all. And I think they would be beneficial for your life. Like, I think the world needs more of this. But there's a fourth aspect. Remember I said there was four aspects? So there's a fourth aspect that I want to end on, and it's this, the fourth aspect. You need to spend time with Jesus. Spend time with Jesus. Jesus says, come with me. That's the passage. Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. He doesn't say, come without me. He doesn't say, come and don't understand that all of this has been given to you by me. No, he says, come with me. And this is the grand story of Scripture. That God, Emmanuel, desires to be with his people. That he like a groom and a bride, they're meant to be together. That he comes for us. That he gives himself for us. That ultimately he dies on the cross for us. That we might be with him. This is the promise. This is the gospel. The God who wants to be with you. And so when you go, when you quiet yourself, when you get some rest, do that with Jesus. Now, some of you get that. And I just want to lean into that challenge. Like, go do that this week. Don't make an excuse. Go do it. Even if it's 15 minutes. Go and do that. And for some of you, we need to do a little more work because that conversation about being with God is a hard conversation that I don't have time for today. Because some of us think that like God works for us. We're like, buddy, you know, buddy Jesus, hey, right? Some of us think that God works against us, if we're real honest. Like he's ready to throw a lightning bolt every time we mess up. It's like that, you know, mean teacher, right? Some of us think that like he is here so that my life can be better. And those are all distortions of the goodness of the gospel and the goodness of God being with you. And so here's what I want to do. I want you to engage with that, bring your questions, and then over the course of the next 8 weeks, we're going to engage in a series called With that I think is going to be very transformational for all of us. It's going to help us unpack some of the baggage that we have with God. And it's going to help us see God hopefully a lot more clearly. Because it is central to understanding Jesus, that he is a God who is with us. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I do pray for this room and those engaging online that they would go do this week. Maybe even today, on this Sabbath day, that they would do these things, that they would seek you out. And God, I pray for all the busyness we're in the midst of. And a lot of it's really good, God. And we want to offer it to you as our first fruit, but we also want to offer to you our rest. And so I just pray for courage for us. I pray that we make good plans and execute on them. And I pray that in these quiet moments, we'd be able to hear your voice. God, thank you. Thank you that we can taste and see that you're good. I pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen.